Democratic candidate for governor, Bob Divers, on the other end of the line. Bob, how are you this morning, sir? Good?
I'm great. Glad to see the weather warmed up.
Well, you go to the north, and I was looking at the IDOT map, and there's a lot of little squigglies over some of the areas of interstates and highways when they talk about icing to the north, but that starts Springfield, east-west, not in Springfield. Well, how is it in Marine, Illinois? Is that where you're at?
Yeah, so we're above freezing this morning, around 35 degrees. We're a little foggy, as I heard you say, that could be in southern Illinois, but it's just wet. But it's not freezing, and we're glad that the roads are dry enough and safe with free of ice.
Yeah. So, Bob, I'm glad you were able to join us this morning, and I wish I could have gotten you on last week, because in particular Thursday, releasing your tax returns for you and your wife, Karen.
Yes.
And, well, at the same time, a new call for a plan. I think when I was reading other comments about your Thursday press conference, no, he's not a billionaire, and he's not a millionaire.
Well, I think my tax returns revealed that, Tom, that we're a middle-class family. We make around $150,000 joint income, as many people in this part of the state do. There are two working individuals. We've been very fortunate. We've lived a good life, and there's nothing wrong with being middle-class. And what I've continued to say is that I don't think you're going to see real change in Springfield till you change the type of people who are there governing. And I think the best person to be your next governor is a middle-class person that pays all their taxes, pays all their bills, understands that, and has also served in local government where we do the same thing. And that was why I was running for governor. So I did a very transparent disclosure of my taxes last week for 5 years. We're proud of our transparency and openness, and these taxes can be reviewed by anybody. Now, we also laid out this tax plan to call for progressive income tax, because all the Democratic candidates are talking about it, but the general public wants to know what it's going to look like.
Well, Bob, this is the thing that I thought interesting, because you come out and you say progressive taxes, we're going to tax the rich more, but you are very specific in what you were calling for. When you didn't just say, we want to do progressive taxes. You told people what you exactly wanted to do, from somebody who makes $25,000 to $45,000 to $150,000 to $999,999. You scoped it all out.
Yes, well, we did pretty extensive research. We looked at what all other states who have progressive models did, but something that would be unique and attractive to this tax model for Illinois. You know, especially in southern Illinois, there's a lot of people make less than $40,000 a year. Now, some people can't imagine that, but that's reality, because some of these individuals are small business owners, as my wife. And, you know, when they pay 5% income tax, that's a greater proportion of their earning powers to be able to be used to pay bills and other costs. So, you know, those tax brackets actually get lowered down below 3.75% that they were previously paying. They pay 2.2%, which is a more fair taxation. And people making less than $25,000, my tax plan says they pay 1% of the base, which helps low-income residents have more earning power to pay their bills in the state of Illinois. And those that are making over $1 million can definitely pay some more to help the tax system, because of the fact that they wouldn't miss $10,000 if they paid additional taxes. And the problem is, Tom, some of them don't pay any taxes.
Households,
and that's not right, because they tax shelter.
Yeah, what you're talking about is households between $150,000 and $999,999 would pay 4.95%.
Right. That's what the current tax rate right now is for everybody. Okay?
Right.
So we're going to lower the taxes below that. The group that I think you would see that would get the greatest tax relief from this is from $45,000 to $150,000. Because that's where a bulk of taxpayers are, and they would go back to the tax rate before it was raised this past year, 3.75.
All right. Now, there's two issues in particular. When you start talking about taxes in Illinois, people get pretty hinky. I think you and I can agree on that.
Right.
When you talk about progressive taxes, let's talk about two areas of concerns that have been brought to me. One, that people are already running for the border, and just the talk about raising taxes is going to drive that immigration out of the state even to even higher numbers. Your thoughts there?
Sure. If they run west, they're going to all pay 6% in Missouri. So don't go that direction. The only state that would have a better tax model than this maybe would be Indiana, that's in the 3%. So this tax plan doesn't drive millionaires out of the state of Illinois. It just asks them to pay their fair share.
You know, it's interesting, Bob, when I was doing research that I looked about how many, you know, I'm a lifelong resident of Illinois. You know how it is when you're in the bottle, you don't see what's on the label. But when you start looking around, you see that progressive taxes are used a lot in this state, in this country, but not in this state.
That is right. We are one of eight states that doesn't have a progressive income tax. And I claim that it's the reason that we've got a revenue problem in the state. And, you know, in looking at this, that upper level income bracket, really, we have got to close the loopholes in taxation in the state of Illinois if we are going to change our revenue problem in the state. Because as long as we're allowing individuals who make large sums of money that don't pay a fair share of this taxation and take advantage of the state, those of us in the middle class are just the big losers.
All right. Now, another one, which was a concern that was brought to me, that wouldn't be able to put progressive taxes in place in Illinois without a constitutional amendment.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that was the importance of laying this out at this date, because now residents in the state have something to look at, since it's been disclosed that, hey, this is what I'd be voting on. Because the thing I find as I continue to campaign is people are like, what is progressive income tax? What does it mean? What does it look like? And this gives us this window of time between now and 2020 to continue to campaign on this, market this to the general public, and say, hey, this is what it would mean to you. This is why we should pass it. And to retirees, as to this is what your expectations would be in here, and this is why this can help make retirement systems whole, and we can get out of this $138 billion deficit and make our pension obligations that we need to make.
See, it's like you were reading my mind there, because I wanted to ask you point blank, and I know this sounds remedial or even asinine in some points, that you ask, why do we need to raise taxes? We just did. Because we have a number of people have told me this. Look, we don't have a money, we don't have a revenue problem in the state of Illinois. We have a spending problem in the state of Illinois, and Democrats have told me that just the same as Republicans.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's all kinds of models, and this is something else that, as governor, that we will seriously look at, and that's how we are spending our money and getting the most cost-effective contracts, hires for the state of Illinois that we can maybe trim some areas where there may be some waste. And you know there's a lot of discussion about pensions in the state continue amongst residents, and you know, real pension reform I think comes in cleaning up pension abuse, and not for individuals who've put in all their time and years of service that they are affected. But, you know, when someone serves a couple of months in a government position and they get a pension, I know there was legislation that was supposed to clean it up, but we still continue to hear about it. It's just not right.
And this, you know, it's hard to imagine with the debt you just mentioned, right? What would you say, 135?
138.
$138 billion, that you can have a problem that is so big that it eclipses the pension problem, because when you look at that as a duet, it can be overwhelming.
Well, you know, this is something that I would encourage residents all over the state to do as they meet us who are running for governor, and that's ask, you know, immediately, how are you going to address this issue? I've been the one candidate that has said that the most important thing we do is that we need to immediately pay down these bills, because we're paying too much interest on the bills right now that are outstanding, still about $10 billion of just general state bills. And we need to look at further bonding of those, because we have a debt either way, and refinance this debt, because it's just like an individual If you're in debt with credit cards or whatever, you look at getting the best interest rate you can. You don't just continue to let your revenue be eaten up by excessive interest charges.
Well, Bob, and you just mentioned
we got to do if we're going to better fund our schools.
Bob, you just mentioned this too. You know, in just a couple of moments ago, you know, we suddenly have an outstanding debt. Say, you know, we borrowed $13 billion, something like that. That suddenly, when we've got this debt on Main Street, we know what the number is, and we borrow the money. And then we stop talking about it anymore because we've borrowed the money and the bills are paid, but we haven't paid back the loan. And that really, and sure, we did. We renegotiated a lower interest rate from that. The governor and the comptroller both agree on something. They don't agree on things very often, but they agree on that. That debt is still outstanding. I mean, we've got to have a way of paying for this, too. We keep kind of putting things underneath the rug.
Right.
And you know we're going to step on them. It's like Legos when the kids are playing in the floor. You think, well, they clean the bedroom. They hide it underneath the rug. And then mom and dad walk in and go, ow, that really hurts. I kind of see that as our debt, especially when it comes to Wall Street.
Well, you're right. And this is, I think, the thing that my candidacy is talking about the most. And that the most important issue in the state is our financial stability. And until we change the economic direction of where Illinois is at, are we really going to be able to do the things that, you know, people who are in office talk about? And, you know, everywhere that I go, people talk about better funding schools. They talk about reinstituting social services. These things simply cannot happen in the state of Illinois because we don't have the money to do it. And that's hard to say. It's hard to look someone in the face and say, until we get our financial house in order, are you going to do this? Because you can pass all kinds of legislation in this state, but the bottom line comes down to, can you pay for it?
Yes.
And that's the dimension that I really bring as a candidate, is looking at this whole issue with the true facts in mind, and how are we going to dig ourselves out of this mess?
Well, here's the thing, Bob. I mean, how popular are you going to be out on the campaign trail saying, I want to raise taxes? I mean, if your opponent just says he wants to raise taxes.
Well, here was the thing, is that it wasn't actually that I was going to raise taxes. I'm only going to raise taxes on individuals who are making over $1 million.
There you go. And see, okay. But you know how the nature of rhetoric is.
Right,
you know.
Right, I understand. But that point needs to be clarified, because for the middle class are going to see a tax cut, and their taxes are going to go back to where they were in 2016. People who are in the upper middle class are going to stay the same, and those who are wealthy are going to be asked now for the first time ever to pay their fair share.
We're talking to Democratic candidate for governor Bob Diber. Bob, here was something else. Some of my sources had told me that a number of Democratic candidates have really been kind of cut off from the party, and the word had gone out, no, you don't give money to these guys. You give it to J.B. Pritzker because that's our man. Have you seen the support from the Democratic Party that you expected, you hoped for?
Well, no, I'm not the endorsed candidate. And I will tell you, locally, I have some very strong party support by precinct committeemen and let's say county elected officials have been very supportive of me in the Metro East area here. I've received some friendly support, let's say, in Cook County, and I have good relationships. But the thing is, I think that's been disturbing has been the very fact that there's such an awe around the big money in this race,
yeah,
that some people have lost, you know, the perspective as to what the candidates are really about. What are their qualifications? I don't normally talk about my candidates or my opponents, but they're all good, decent people. But the key thing is here is you got to look at who's had the experience that really can govern. Who really understands budgets, as we've been talking about. And the other thing is that, you know, once everybody is on the ballot, okay, in a poll, everybody needs to be included when the voters are asked, who are you going to vote for? You know, and to put some other people in the category of other, I don't think is fair to them in just recognizing the very fact of their effort to become a candidate.
Well, this is one of the things that I found interesting when you come to Candace, exactly what you're talking about. When I look at your experience as school superintendent, now, some people would say, oh, yeah, well, but look at how we run the state when it comes to schools. And I'm curious, with your experience in realizing the pension debt we have when teachers and supporting them and managing that pension has got to be better, has got to be one of our points. We need better returns on our investments and paying some pretty hefty fees on looking after some of this stuff for our pensions. But, you know, when it comes to suffering at the hands of the budget, the educational system in this state has really taken, you know, a brunt of this. And Wayne Rosenthal over at IDNR would say the same thing about his category as well. But I'm very often curious when you look at other states and the number of regions they have and superintendents, they have a lot fewer. Should we be doing consolidation in this state, Bob?
Well, that's a good question. You know, you're talking to the guy that oversaw the consolidation of regional offices in 2011. I happen to have been president of the regional superintendents. We reduced the number at that time from 43 down to 39. And in fact, it affected Southern Illinois in several different ways of the reshaping, eliminated two offices in this part of the state, which was to bring about greater efficiencies. That portion didn't solve the problem. Could it be further consolidated? That could be something that possibly could be looked at, but there would not be great financial gain from the consolidation of regional delivery systems. Now, when you talk about school systems, you're getting into altogether different dimensions. School consolidation is one of the most hot topics. If you want to really get into a hot topic mix, you know, Pat Quinn talked about reducing the school system from 862 to 300 and I think his number was around 360, and Sheila Simon was going to head this up, and I tell you what, it went flat because nobody wants to kill the school mascot, you know?
Yeah.
And I've made an effort in Madison County to consolidate three districts since I've been regional superintendent on three different votes, and all three times it's failed by less than 10 votes, and we haven't got it done because people are that hard fast on maintaining their local school systems. Now, I think there's some greater efficiencies from my experience of being involved in public education that can be brought about by the number of administrative divisions that operate. For example, special education co-ops, career and technical administrative divisions. These are all some early childhood centers. These are all different units that have administrative costs that we could roll into central administration because of the technology we have to manage them.
Right. Bob Divers joined us this morning. He's Democratic candidate for governor. Bob, when you get in the neighborhood, man, you got to come by the studios.
We'll try to do that.
All right. And because I'm curious about this, but, you know we need money. Do we cut? Do we use progressive taxes? Telling you what, this is going to be a hot button issue here right now because you've got at least two off the top of my head candidates saying we've got to do something about money and we've got to do more about revenue. And of course, yours, you know, the first thing you mentioned before is look, I'm only raising taxes on this group, right?
Right.
So, and of course, the message is going to be important as we move forward into March. Boy, it's going to be an intense one, isn't it, Bob?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Is it eight or nine candidates? It's eight, right?
No, I think we are down to six.
Oh, are we? I had some people drop out. I know
yes.
It was kind of a flurry there for a while. Bob Diver, as we said, Democratic candidate for governor. Once again, Bob, thanks for your time this morning. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Tom.